From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author and founder of The Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. You are too. Today we have our monthly, bi-monthly episode of The Bigger Picture with my friend and guest. He's an author. He's a transmedium, Michael Rachia. He's got 5 books out, but they're all one better than the next. But lucky you, he's working on a 6th book now. So neither one of us, nor myself or Michael, can wait to see what's in it. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Maria. It's great to be with you. Always a fantastic introduction.
Oh, well, it's always good to have you on, and this show is like a vacation for my mind. So I look forward to it as much as my listeners do, I'm sure. It's a break from one reality into the only reality that actually matters.
Yes, the super reality.
Exactly. You know, it's very difficult to explain to people that everything here is an illusion. You know, and I think about Albert Einstein, who said this reality is all illusion, albeit a persistent one.
Yes. And the other realities are also illusions, because we are creators of them at whatever level we happen to be at.
Uh-huh.
They're all dreams from our toy box that we can put away afterwards if we so wish.
Right.
Certainly the dreams above or beyond this one are a lot more enlightened and delightful than this one is at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I know you've covered that in your book of what other dimensions are like. And, you know, sometimes question, are we the dumbest planet in all of these illusions and all these creations?
I think we really could be.
You know, I often refer to it as the planet of the apes. And the more I look at what humans do to other humans, the suppression of rights, you know, based on color, sex, sexual orientation. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, I had these illusions, you know, when, you know, children in my day, we said, we're actually going to see the year 2000. And we all had our imaginings of what the year 2000 was going to be. And everybody thought we'd be this enlightened, super tech, you know, world peaceful kind of world. And then 2000 came, and what a disappointment.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We're repeating the same mistake. Literally repeating the same mistake.
Mm-hmm.
We got things wrong, as we've discussed in other shows a long time ago, and are still investing in that maneuver as being the right thing for us on a subconscious level.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this...
We're not going to change until we put something different into the dream, into the illusion.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's actually the first question that I'm going to get to from one of my listeners. And she thought it might be a dumb question. But, of course, I always tell people there's no such thing as a dumb question. When I did my astrology show last week, we were talking about spiritual matters. And I suggested that everybody start sending good energy or positive thoughts to mass consciousness. I know that we need to change the field, but I think we also need to change mass consciousness.
Yes.
And, you know, there are people, a lot of my listeners have read your books, and they're, you know, applying a lot of this information to themselves. But she asked, Patricia asked, could you go through the basics again on how to send out light? She says, I'm never sure if I'm doing it right. She says, I'm guessing it's a combination of feeling the intention from the heart and visualization, but sometimes I have a hard time with the visualization part. Do you fill yourself with light first?
Well, you contact your greater self, your God self, through the heart center. And whenever you do that, whether you do that on a bus or whether you do that for means of personal meditation, you access the light that you really are, the creative being that you really are. So by going within to whatever your definition of divinity is, you instantly fill with light. And by going to the heart center, you become able to direct that light. Mm-hmm. And then it's a matter of using your imagination or visualization techniques, whatever works best for you, to see those areas that you want that light to go to. Mm-hmm. And to see that light traveling to those areas and permeating those areas or individuals with its brilliance. And as a result of permeating those areas and individuals with its brilliance, lifting them out of this heavy illusion into a state that they were in before the time of the fall, before we made that mistake that we're still suffering from. Mm-hmm. You can do that with yourself. You can see yourself becoming brighter, becoming filled with intense, white, beautiful light. You can direct it to areas of your body that need some attention, that have a disease at the moment. Right. You can direct it to other people, to those you love who are suffering in some way, and see that light permeating their bodies and the areas of their bodies that need attention. And just see this brilliance going out into the world. Perhaps you could put in front of you, as a visualization exercise, a globe of the world. Imagine a globe of the world in front of your face. And turn round that globe of the world and direct light to each of the countries. And see each of the countries illuminating, becoming brighter, becoming filled with God light. Imagine in those countries that the men and women and children suddenly are in harmony with each other. See what that society would be like, where there aren't any of the prejudices that you spoke about earlier, Maria, and see that society as you would like it to be, as the God within you wishes it to be, as you as an angelic being wish it to be, and bless all those people, bless the men and the women and the children, those that you like, and more particularly those that you don't like.
Right.
The ones that you don't like, Patricia, are the ones that need the light the most.
Right, but that's the hard part. That is the hard part.
It isn't easy, but it is the way to go. Because if a being is responsible for misdemeanors, is responsible for harming other human beings, they will never change from without.
Right.
Might have to lock them away because they are a danger to society, but will never change from without. They will only change, they can only change from a realization that comes from within, from a change that comes from within. And in order to get them to see themselves as they are and to make the decision to change, to become more spiritual, you have to flood them with enough light so that they are illumined from within and can take a look at their actions in a different way. You see, if we send out thoughts of anger, and thoughts of hatred, thoughts of animosity, and it's the natural thing to do on a human level, isn't it, to those who perpetuate dark acts, to those who are violent, to those who control people and persecute people, then we fuel those aspects of their personality. And we're drawing on that mass consciousness that you mentioned before, Maria, and we're drawing on the field to reinforce those aspects of those people that we see as being wrong.
Right.
We need to send instead light so that they can change from within. You know what it's like? If somebody tells you not to do something,
right,
you resent that.
Exactly.
You're going to do it anyway.
It's sort of like what you try to
yourself from within, that this is not the way to go. Then you've made the change to yourself. It's been your realization. What the light does is to provide a background within which people can examine what they are like and move on and evolve and remember the spiritual beings that they really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that surely answered the question. You know, for some people, I know a lot of people have a hard time with visualization. Yes. So it could be something as simple as just imagining a big golden balloon or a pink balloon surrounding the entire planet.
Absolutely.
You know, color
magic. Yes, a physical globe of the world.
Mm-hmm.
To go out and buy one of those little educational globes of the world.
Right, exactly. They still sell them, too.
Yeah.
Even though children probably couldn't find one country on it, they tried to at this point. They just used to use it as a bouncing rubber ball. Okay, we've got lots more questions for you. And some of them are long, so if you need me to repeat it, just let me know. In the Joseph's communications, she's referring to your life after death, she said, Joseph says that before the matrix of the earth was changed and before the field was changed, the earth was visited in order for souls to realize, contemplate, and view different potentials within physicality. Did they have temptations, sickness, or conflicts when they decided it was time to leave physicality? Did they experience death as we know it?
According to Joseph, before the time of the fall, we operated in visiting this planet as we do in the rest of the universe, visiting our universes, visiting other planets, in that we create, first of all, with our God-given facility to create, a sphere of experience that we then decide to move through in order to experience and in order to grow. And from what Joseph has said and from what I feel from within, that experience originally was a blissful one, as most creative acts are blissful ones, most experiences are blissful ones. And I don't feel, and Joseph sort of states, that the misery and the upset and the pain came as a result of the fall, as a result of speeding up matter, and as a result of that, not being able to completely put away our illusions or create them perfectly. And it's because we're hanging on to that memory that we can't experience the bliss that we once did in creating spheres, worlds, to move through. But there is an overall, whenever Joseph talks of the angelic realms, whenever Joseph talks of the angelic children and is referring to us as the angelic children, there is a feeling of joy and harmony and bliss in creation and in setting up new scenarios to investigate, to add to our individual experiences, to add to the experiences of the angelic children and the angelic host, and to add to the experience of God, of divinity. Because we are part of God, so whatever we experience, God experiences. So, thus far, we haven't had anything to contradict the view that outside of this particular sphere where we've altered things, altered the dream, that creation is blissful, is a blissful experience. Without the heavy physicality, there is some physicality. We come into some physicality in order to experience within the spheres that we've created. But Joseph also says that death was acknowledged for what it is, simply the end of a journey, the end of a particular experience. And at that time, our psychic, our spiritual abilities weren't masked as they are now. And so we knew of that link to the spiritual realms. We knew of that link to the greater consciousness, to the greater creativity. And death was simply welcomed as an end of that particular experience and the start of further experiences.
So I would assume then at this particular time in the field, before it was changed, that there weren't any temptations, sickness, or conflicts because it was a state of bliss.
It was a state of bliss, and it was also a state of harmony. All our temptations come from a subconscious misbelief that we need power, that we need somebody else's energy, that there isn't enough for us, because we're living within the finite energies of the field that we've created via the mass consciousness and the way that we believe via the mass consciousness. So before that state that followed the fall, it was simply a matter of knowing that you were a traveler, for example, as an analogy, that you were going on a journey or a holiday, that you were moving through a certain set of circumstances, and that as a result of moving through those circumstances, you would add various experiences to your infinite being and enrich yourself and enrich others by having passed through those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. that makes sense to me. All right, here's another one. It's a totally different question, and I kind of like it. She says, I know people who have adopted children who say they just knew that this was their child. When a soul is born and put up for adoption, does that soul know it will not stay with the birth mother and will have other parents? And do they choose those parents before their soul enters the body?
I think in all circumstances, and according to what Joseph has told us, we choose in conjunction with a team of advisors, if you will, before we come here. The parents and the associates that will bring out the most in the way of karmic opportunity for us whilst we are here on Earth. I think it's also interesting that you're saying that adoptive parents feel like that is their son or their daughter. I think it's very true that the phrase blood is thicker than water. It turns on its head spiritually, doesn't it?
Right.
And there are people that we know that are far closer than any family that we have through physical bonds only.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are people that we meet along life's highway who we recognize at some level.
Right.
We recognize them as teachers, we recognize them as family, and within minutes of being in their presence, we know that those people complete us in a way that perhaps some of our relatives don't. Now, I don't mean that in a harsh way, but there are people along life's path who become closer than blood. And I'm sure that we are meant to meet those people as we travel through life, as indeed I was meant to meet Joan, my teacher, who was someone that I instantly recognized the day I saw her, and yet had never physically met her before in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner Jane, my other half.
Mm-hmm.
The circumstances that brought us together were amazing, but had to be, were inevitable.
Right.
I think it's inevitable that we meet these family soul members along the way.
Absolutely.
So yes, I think we, in conjunction with a team of advisors, not just ourselves, look at our prospective next life, having decided first of all that we're coming back, and then perhaps wondering as we're in the queue why on earth we made that decision.
Absolutely. That's just
for you, brother. I think we then determine that we will have help and direction and connection with certain people who will allow us to learn from them and they to learn from us.
Absolutely.
I don't think it's coincidence in any way that that we meet the people that we meet along life's highway, and that the people that are incredibly important to us have not come into our aura by chance. I think it's by design.
Well, I have found myself on a personal level that I have so many what I call adopted daughters that have found me in this lifetime, and I have relationships with them as if they were my own daughter. And what's really interesting is I got to introduce two of my adopted daughters that had no idea of each other except what I've told about each one of them about each other. Because there's so many similarities in their journey and how I got to meet them, and it's kind of interesting. And when we all got together a few weeks ago, and these girls finally got to meet, one was in her 40s, the other one's in her 30s, the way I introduced them was, meet your sister. And these two women hugged and kissed like they knew each other forever. And it was so exciting. I actually did a selfie with both of them and put it up on my Facebook. I said, here I am with my two daughters. So you can always tell who you're really related to on a soul level. Do you know what I mean? Hold on. I think I might have lost my... Hold on. Oops, okay, here's Michael. I thought I lost you for a minute. But, you know, when I talk about the people that I've met in my life, you know, my family, and I talk to my listeners all the time, and I always tell them, you have to be members of my soul group or you never would be listening to my show. And I also believe that every one of the guests I have on my show is a member of my soul group, because how else could they have found me? Do you know what I mean? There's 7.5 billion people on the planet. So what do you think of that, Michael?
Well, I think that's absolutely right, Marie. I mean, you and I felt a companionship and a connection when we first made a connection together, didn't we?
Absolutely.
You know instinctively when people are on your wavelength, mm-hmm. not just a wavelength physically, but a wavelength spiritually, particularly. And that's what we recognize in people. And it's a great comfort to know that we have this vast family, both on Earth and waiting for us beyond the earth, in the spiritual realms. And that there is that, whenever we try and work positively, whenever we try and send light out into the world or make a difference with someone, we have all that weight of help behind us from that loving family that we are a part of and will be a part of forever.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, one of the big, and you probably don't know, lucky you, you don't have to follow politics. But one of the big stories in the United States right now is the Supreme Court voting against pretty much women's rights to contraception and abortion.
Right.
Where does the soul fit into that?
Where does the soul fit into contraception and abortion?
Right.
Right. It's a matter of when does the spirit come into the physical body? If I might relate a tale that happened to my teacher, Joan, once. She was given a ring by a very distraught mother-to-be, who wasn't a mother-to-be, who had been forced to abort one of two babies. One was healthy and the other wasn't. The other was malformed. And she felt terribly, terribly guilty about this. And Joan didn't give an immediate answer. She sat and prayed about it and determined that the body was forming, that the spirit hadn't entered that particular child at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, had they not made that decision, both babies would have been lost. The other side of the coin is that we set in motion, if we not create a life, because we don't actually create a life, do we? We provide the means by which a life can come here, but we don't actually create that life. That life is already created, is already a part of God. And Joseph describes it as an arc of energy, an arc that begins when we're born or when we're conceived, an arc that we follow through to the point of our departure from this physical world. But that arc can also take different time scales on. That arc can be the normal time scale of, you know, 70, 80, 90 years, or that arc can be a few seconds, in that there is something to be learned, something to be determined by that soul by visiting the earth just for a short length of time. And then nothing is done in isolation. That soul may need to touch the lives of the people around it. The lives of the people around it may need to be touched by the effect that that soul has had on their lives, whether that soul is with them for 90 years or 90 seconds. So nothing is wasted. All life is sacred. All life goes on. It's just at what point should that life go back to the greater life? What are your feelings on that subject, Maria?
Well, you know, my feelings have always been the same. Okay, when you really understand the eternity of the soul, you understand the vastness of the soul. To think that a soul that's as big as your imagination can possibly stretch would be content or comfortable to be inside a tiny little 12-inch space in a womb inside a woman while it forms, while it's physical avatar forms for the soul to inhabit for however long this is here. To me, it makes no sense at all that a soul would be inside that body for 9 months. And because I do, as you know, a lot of readings for people, A lot of times I talk to souls that have no bodies. I can talk to souls that were aborted. I can talk to souls that lost their lives when they were one year old. So to me, the whole issue that's trying to be decided by religious fanatics on their own view or version of religion is irrelevant. That's my knowing that the soul doesn't enter the body until whenever it feels like it, which is most probably way after it's been born. I don't even know that a soul stays inside a child for the first couple of years. Why would they want to?
I don't think that we ever truly stay inside our bodies. I think our bodies are a reference point. And I don't know whether this happens with you, Marie, but I very often feel that my point of consciousness is not in the body at all, but is perhaps 18 inches in front of it, but around the area of my forehead, and that too is only an approximation. I'm very aware at times of being far greater than, as you say, an avatar of what I see in the mirror. And to back up what you said about abortions and speaking to souls that don't have bodies, I was once sitting with a lady at the other end of the country in a cafe. I'd only just met this lady, and I could see psychically running around her feet a little girl. And the subject came up, and I said, forgive me being very, very personal indeed, but have you had an abortion? And she said, yes, I have. I said, well, there's a beautiful little girl, a blonde-haired little girl, running around saying, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
Right.
And this lady was ill at the time. Mm-hmm. I knew that the illness was as a result of her feeling this tremendous guilt for years because of what she perceived to have done to her daughter. And as I gave her that message that everything was okay, I don't think she took it in instantly.
No.
I could hear relatives on that side saying, thank you, oh thank you for getting that across. So it is an important issue.
Right, it is a big issue.
That needs to be removed from people.
Right, well, you know, humans like to dole out shame and guilt. Shame, guilt, blame, all these negatives. And I remember my teacher Sunday used to say, if you take those words out of your vocabulary, you'll never feel them again. He says, and they're just a waste of energy.
Sorry, Maria, I lost that first part of the reply, I'm afraid.
Well, he used to just talk about shame and guilt and blame as wasted energy.
Yes, absolutely it is.
And really, I think with abortion, birth control, it's about shaming and guilting women because people really don't understand. You know, they can say, even Catholics can say they believe in the eternity of the soul, but obviously they don't believe in it. If they can be so against a woman choosing whether or not to have a child.
And I was brought up as a Catholic, and nowhere in the Bible did Jesus ever take against sex or rule on contraception.
Right.
It is a control factor that has come through into the religion since and into so many other religions.
Well, you know, I was raised, we don't even have to go there, but let's face it, the Bible shut down my throat 24/7. And when you look at the story of Adam's creation, it makes it very clear, he took Adam out of the dust of the ground, formed him into a man. And then it says, God breathed the breath of life into Adam, and he became a living soul. So to me, it's still when it's out on its own and it's able to breathe, that's when it's alive. Okay? But everything else is just kind of like putting the computer together, and until you put that on switch, there's nothing there. Who would want to spend nine months in that trapped little environment? It's just illogical.
There isn't even a TV, Maria.
Not even TV or whatever your mother's watching, which probably isn't good. But the other thing I wanted to point out is what I have found through the years, just from experience, people I know, my own family. If a woman miscarries or a woman chooses to have an abortion, what I find is someone in that same family will get pregnant within a few months of that abortion. So I believe the soul picks out door number one, door number two, and door number three. So if door number one gets closed, they still want to be in the same family lineage. Then all of a sudden somebody has a miraculous pregnancy. The soul always finds its way.
I think we also have to add that no life, no experience is ever wasted. And if you're looking not only at abortion, but about children who go at an early age, that is not a waste. And you must have seen, as I've seen on numerous occasions, someone during a reading, for example, from the spiritual realms, who will introduce themselves at first as a child.
Right.
And then, having established with the mother or the father who they are, will instantly grow in stature into this wonderful being of light and say, yes, I was that child, but this is also me. And part of that light is because I had that experience on earth or with my mother and father or connected to those souls. And very often there is that message of thank you and don't be guilty and don't grieve. Because I'm perfectly all right. Not only am I perfectly all right, but part of me is with you in gratitude and in love and sharing your journey.
Absolutely. And they always show, you know, that they're happy, you know, and that always gives people great comfort. So, you know, I even though, you know, I try to stay out of the fray, it's almost impossible for me. It's like I can't just keep my lips closed sometimes. They just keep on going. But I see that a lot, you know, and it brings to mind, I don't know whether you're familiar with the American author, Susie Ward, but she lost her son when he was 17. His name was Matthew. And it devastated her. But a few months after he crossed, he started channeling to her. And Susie was not ever a medium or a channeler. But she's channeled many books from her son since. So she realized his purpose not just in life, but also in death.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, just so my listeners know, I should probably still have some of those interviews in my archives on the Matthew books. And, you know, it was her first book that had totally blown me away because he was describing a place that I was dreaming of often. And I knew that he was accurate because I have been there. So I think one of the more important things, at least to me, that you said today was that the soul, we're never fully here. I can tell you I'm not fully here. I go out of body every night. Okay? So why would a massive soul choose to be in a body trapped in a tiny little womb space, you know, where you can't even order womb service?
Yes, indeed. I think it's back to Patricia's original point about the... about us travelling and being on a journey. And there's just a point of us that is on that journey. And it's necessary for us to have a point at which we can recognise that journey and recognise the other travellers. But it's nothing more than that. When I come back from a trance session, there is this definite feeling of being squashed and shoved back into a very... restrictive area of energy. I feel the reason that the depression comes to me after I've come back from a trance session is because it's so difficult to be back in that small form, relative small form, and to be hammered by the vibrations of this plane.
Right, you're trapped.
And for a while, when you travel at night to the spiritual realms, or in my case, when I'm freed so that Joseph can use my voice and my mental faculties, it's a wonderful feeling.
Right. I mean, how many people...
Why sometimes you want to go and they turn back and they say, no, Sonny Jim, it's not your time yet.
Right, there's so many stories like that, you know, and people tend to come back without a fear of death and they come back, you know, feeling greater. They have an extra special healing gift of some sort. You know, how many times have people seen in the movies where someone's in the hospital and they're getting operated on and you can see their soul hovering above the body? So if the soul can do that while you're having, you know, a gastric bypass or something, obviously the soul is going to wait until its vehicle is prepared to get inside of it, because it's a big trade-off stepping into these tiny little human bodies and being stuck, you know, in this density.
Yes. So. And originally, the bodies weren't that dense. Before the time of the fall, the bodies weren't as dense as they are now. We weren't as restricted as we are now.
Absolutely.
We have that sense of individualism within an angelic body, with an angelic framework. But we weren't as isolated as we are today. We believe ourselves to be as total individuals and totally isolated, and neither is true. We're part of the whole, and there's a great joy in that. And we're never alone, and there's a great joy in that too.
Right, exactly. But a lot of people do think they're alone. But a lot of it, I think, has to do with just mass consciousness and the programming that they got.
Yes, indeed.
All right, Michael, we're going to go to a short break. So stay with us. Michael and I will be back. We've got lots more questions, so stay with us. Okay, welcome back to the bigger picture with myself and my excellent co-host, Mike Riccia. Michael, I noticed you have the initial G in your name. What does that stand for?
That would be a George.
Oh, Michael George. Sort of like George Michael? Can you say?
Yes, but without the dollars.
Without the dollars. You're not blonde. You're not Adjifati Dion. Okay. Let's get to the next question. Joseph says, we have 70 to 80 years to go at the rate we're going. The human race has 70 to 80 years to go if it doesn't change. Do you still think that's accurate at the rate of planetary destruction and war?
My barometer as to whether it's accurate is whether or not the information comes through. Because logically, if we were losing ground over time, I don't think that the soul group that Joseph is a part of would take the effort and use the energy to come through to us. And as he says, it changes from second to second, dependent on what we put into the matrix of the mass consciousness and into the field. He will never give an actual specific time, and he says there's a reason for that. If he gives an actual specific time and a specific day, then people will concentrate it and hasten that time and solidify that time and make it a super reality.
Right, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And I think there's a lesson in that we have to not hope for the best, but see the best, realize the best in our actions. And realize that even if everything came to the end within that time frame, we would have been working daily to liberate souls, to liberate consciousness. And if the majority of mankind had to come back here after the earth had lain fallow for a while and start again, then a number of souls would not and would decide not to because of the light and the information that we're putting into the world. So it is a negative world, there's no doubt about it. It does seem, on a physical level, to be getting, on a mental level, to be getting worse in many areas, but that's the reason that I don't look at the news.
Right.
Because I don't want to influence the vibrations that I'm putting out on a daily basis by a belief in the negative aspects of the world. That's not hiding my head in the sand. It's to do with the mission that I've got and we've got as the Band of Light. Try and hold everything in the best possible visualization for as long as possible in order to get this information out and in order to liberate souls by making them aware that they needn't come back here for another ride on the ghost train if they don't want to.
The ghost train, I like that. The ghost train got my attention. Well, I gotta say, in a way, I envy you. Because there are days where I question my own sanity doing what I do, because I really enjoyed teaching spirituality, teaching the medicine wheel, teaching Reiki, teaching people how to do all the magic that I know how to do. And then my guidance was to do this. And I have to tell you, for a very long time, Michael, I would follow my spiritual direction, kicking and screaming. Okay. No, anything but that. And then I had to realize why I was chosen for this, or I chose it. Because I'm good at it. And somebody has to do it. My son used to always say, why does it always have to be you? And my answer would always be the same. Someone has to do it. I read well, I can speak well, I can write well. Why not?
Yes. Yes, absolutely right. And that's what we say as well. We sometimes say, why us? And exactly the same answer, somebody has to do it, why not us?
Well, whenever I ask the universe why me, the answer is why not you?
Yes, indeed.
I give you a little snotty answer from the universe, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a memory of that for when I get back out there. I'll be kicking your ass on some level for that one. Okay, how can we stop the fuel from slowing us down and making us so fearful and depressed?
Okay, who's the question from?
I didn't keep the names. I got so many.
Okay. Don't worry. How can we stop the field from slowing us down? It is a gradual thing, and it is to do with we can be of the world. We can be in the world, but not of the world. And at present, everyone who's listening to us is creating their own world second by second, because they have a series of beliefs. They have a series of beliefs in a certain background to their life, in certain relationships to their life, in certain expectations to their life, and in what they think is going to be ahead of them day by day. So within this greater world, within the earth, each of us is living within our own separate little world. But that world contributes, as we've discussed tonight, to the mass consciousness and to the field.
Right.
But what we have to do is to change that world step by step. We have to, for example, on a day when everyone is saying to us, this is going to be a miserable day, start by saying, no, it isn't. By finding a smile inside when initially we don't feel that we've got one anywhere in our bodies or in our consciousness.
Right.
And then by proving to ourselves little by little that what we hold to be true and invest power into manifests through us and around us. That we can alter our mood, for example.
Right.
That we can alter our state of health. And that we can, therefore, be as productive as we wish to be spiritually, energetically, with regard to projects, with regard to work, and we can work almost, well, not almost, but entirely outside of the field, dependent on our belief in the energy that we can draw from the God within. So we teach ourselves to empower ourselves. And we teach ourselves to draw energy not from the physical and not from the mass consciousness, but from beyond the energy field of the earth. And beyond the energy field of the earth doesn't mean reaching out into space. It means reaching within, contacting via the heart center that limitless source of energy that is your birthright as an angelic being. And drawing on that energy to change yourself, to make yourself healthier, to energize yourself, and to energize and change the lives of others. So it's baby steps at first by proving to yourself in one area that when you apply your heart mind to something and believe something to be true, then it comes to you. It flows from you, it comes to you. And then you build up confidence that you can apply that energy and that thought process and that creativity to greater projects until you are changing your lifestyle, you're changing your energy levels, you're changing your expectations, you're changing the caliber of people that you attract, and you are ultimately changing the world.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of like, you can go out and about in the world with a smile on your face and change the world just by smiling.
Yes, indeed.
You know, you could see somebody who you know is having a dastardly day and pay them a compliment. You know, what I do, especially when I see parents with new babies, and I look at the parents and, you know, it's hard to be me because I see everything about them and their aura and if that child might eventually be in danger. And I make a point of going over to the young parent and complimenting them on the baby and telling them how blessed they are to have such a beautiful child. And it's almost like you can watch their energy shift.
Yes. They light up, literally, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, I always, from my third eye, I always look at the baby and say, welcome to planet Earth, you're not alone. But I don't say that out loud. But I think they need to know, especially if they ended up at door number three, with the absolutely worst parent. I just look at them and I want them to know that they're not alone.
For whatever reason, infants are always instantly attracted to me. And they will look at me and start giggling and smiling, and their parents actually get a little put off. Like, you know, they don't behave like that for me. Why are they giggling at this strange woman? But I always talk to them from my mind and tell them, you know, like I said, welcome to the planet. You're not alone. Because a lot of these souls have to know that they aren't alone, and they may not recognize the people that they're around at their immediate time.
Which is terrifying for them.
It has to be. You know, it really has to be. But I also like them to know there are others like them. And what I find, you know, especially the past few months, a lot of new clients worldwide that are awake, that are realizing, and they all start out the same saying, I feel so all alone, because they are so gifted. And I think the best thing that I do for them is to tell them that they're not alone. There's so many more of us. They just haven't met them yet. And it's a comfort to them. You know, and I often tell them, you know, tune into my show. You don't have to listen to every one of them. I said, but at least you're going to know you're not alone, because your family is listening. And I think, you know, separating people the way we're separated by so many different things in this world, letting people know they're not alone is so important.
Yes, it's a wonderful change for them.
Absolutely. All right, no big hard question coming up here. So here we go. Is this all there is?
Well, I think there's a one-word answer to that, Maria, isn't there?
Yeah, of course.
No.
No. I think there was a song.
There is. Is there an expansion of that question?
No, just is this all there is? You know, and
no, it isn't.
Even with is this all there is,
what do they mean by this?
Well, I think, and I hear this from a lot of people, so I can tell you what it means. You know, you get up, you go to work, you come home, you get old, you pay your bills, and then it's Groundhog's Day. Is this all there is? No, it isn't.
And that is the point. And not only is it not all there is, but the all there is that you've got at the moment can be a very different all there is if we apply our creative hearts to it. And that's the point. Joseph says that we've got it all wrong with work anyway. You know? And we shouldn't be working for the next dollar and for the next car and for the next holiday, because ultimately those things don't give us any happiness. Increasingly, I don't know what it's like over there, Maria, but here people look terribly unhappy.
Oh, the unhappiness is the American way.
Is it?
It's beyond unhappiness. Listen, we eat 33% of the world's antidepressants.
Oh my goodness.
They're not just unhappy, they're angry too.
Right, there is an anger here as well. And, you know, they've got the big cars, they've got the big houses, they've got the big holidays, but they take their troubles with them. You can't get away from your troubles. A lot of people here want to go to the south of France and retire there, but if they're unhappy in the UK, they're going to be unhappy in the south of France, because the problems are theirs and not to do with the material things that they've got around them.
Absolutely, definitely.
This is not answering the question, I'm sorry. Yes, there is much more than this. It would help whoever has asked the question, and the readers that asked it, the listeners that asked the question, it helps if you start to seek out your spiritual path. It helps to get things into perspective. Don't swallow everything that's said to you spiritually or shown to you spiritually. Seek out. And again, with baby steps, decide what is right for you and what feels right via your heart. And discover for yourself, investigate, test the spirit, test mediums, view mediums, view lecturers, listen to them, and discover the greater world that exists. Discover that there are good mediums and bad mediums. Discover that there are bad lectures and good lectures. But at least you're looking.
Right.
At the point where you're saying, is this all there is, then there's nothing more. You have to add more and examine what is available to you spiritually. And as you open your heart center and begin to look at spiritual values and spiritual properties of yourself and others, then you might decide to get out of all there is and say, right, today I've had enough of the job.
Right.
Today I have the faith to say, enough, I'm closing that door, and as that door closes, another one will open for me. And the one that opens for me will be far more fulfilling than the one I've just closed. But we are tied in by society to say, no, that's the job, that's where your security lies. But it doesn't. Your security lies within. Your security lies with your link with the divine that will always lead you into the next stage of your adventure.
Mm-hmm.
One of my guides, when I started as a medium and didn't have the price of a postage stamp, said that I must say to myself, I have all I need. I have all I need. And this has always been so.
Right.
Never more than I've needed, never less, but always what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was remarkable that when I was working as a young medium, that whenever I gave of my time, of my sympathy, of my psychic abilities, then more was added. The universe always gave back.
Right.
So but part of the equation of getting out of the is this all there is to say, what of myself can I give to others?
Mm-hmm.
And the blessings that come when you give to others, the difference in the way that you feel, will shift that perspective of, is this all there is? And you'll find that there is no greater peace or harmony than connecting to other people and enlightening them and lifting them. And in doing that, you lift yourself, and you change the situations that you are in and the situations that are around you, and your journey changes completely. But as we all think, it's down to us. There's nobody that will say, I'm going to take you out of the all there is.
Right, you have to do it yourself.
Doing something.
Right, it's called self-empowerment. Everybody's on their own journey. You know, what I find, and I've always found, is a lot of people are always trying to feed a hole. It's as if they have a hole in their soul. And they're trying to feed it. They'll either do it with food, buying things, more balls, fancier cars, this and that. But they're still telling me, I just feel like something's missing. And what I have noticed as a commonality is that hole, that little missing link that I think most people feel, is just their missing home. Okay, it's that soul connection. The spiritual connection. You know, and you're not going to fill that hole until you fill your spiritual connection, or go home. You know what I mean?
Yes. And going home can be a matter of going within. It's not necessarily leaving the planet.
Right. Is it?
It's that connection from within. What we're all looking for, I believe, and I'm sure you do, is that we're all looking for the missing divinity within us. You know, we're going to put a tag on it. We're missing the God connection.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying the car is God, or the holiday is God, or the next pizza is God. And yes, at their base level they are, because they're all made out of God's created material, but they're not the God that we're looking for. And they can never satisfy us. Never, ever.
Mm-hmm.
It is that, as you say, connection, reconnection to God, and reconnection to belonging. And being home that we are missing, that makes us so miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But the point at which we can regain that connection and phone home, as it were,
right.
Is within us. It's within each of us.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to come through a vicar or a priest or a holy person. It is there all the time, 24/7, whenever we need to go in there and reconnect.
Absolutely. Well, Micah, thank you so much for joining me today. As always, it's wonderful, so I look forward to our next visit.
How do I, Maria? Let's hope the gremlins have gone by then.
Yes, let's count on that. Okay, take care.
Bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Check out Michael's work at josephspeaks.com and his referral to gremlins. We must have had about 15 times our phone got hacked during this call. Hope you didn't notice it too much. And here's a little tip. One of the things you can do to change your world, change yourself, change your life, it's real easy. Look in the mirror every day. Start your day. Just look at yourself and say out loud, I love you. What can I do to make you happy today? Anyway, you guys make me happy for hanging in there with me through all the craziness. And I'll see you guys tomorrow when I'm back with the news. Take care.